Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Wednesday morning. It's the 23rd of June, and we're thrilled to have you here. It is what seems to be a beautiful day. We hope it continues in that direction. 14 minutes past the hour of 9 o'clock. Let me introduce the group to you, and we'll get started. We welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. All you have to do to be a part of the program is write to us, panel at WAMC.org. You can keep the letters short and to the point, and we would love to have you with us. All right, we're going to introduce everybody, and then we'll get started. And a lot of busy news day, a lot of stuff going on yesterday. So we'll talk about it all, and some really good stuff, and some things that even broke overnight that we'll get to as well. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Good morning. It was quite an interesting day. You know, at about 4:15 this morning when the Great Walk began. I have to tell you, I thought I needed gloves. It was cold. So what I did is I took two black poop bags for Murray and put them on my hands.
Those aren't the same things. No, you know that. They're not the same things.
They're not the same as gloves, but they're thin.
Well, they're plastic, right? I mean, I don't...
Oh, shh. Don't say
that. Well, no, but I mean, but it's recycled. But you...
Socks might have worked.
Yeah, socks.
Socks would have worked.
I don't know.
But in these cases, these are these black poop bags and on my hands.
I wouldn't be saying you did that.
Why?
Well, whatever.
Was it cold or was it crisp out this morning?
Oh, I thought it was kind of cold.
It was chilly. It was 40-something, 42, 43, somewhere in there. I agree with you. Yeah, no, a beautiful, beautiful day.
Did the plastic bags work?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good.
Absolutely.
Oh, there you go.
Absolutely. I mean, just to be clear, there was no poop in the thing.
No, although that could have been
warmer. That would have been warmer.
Really? It could have been warmer, exactly. Yeah.
It's really a lovely conversation so far.
Okay, thank you for that.
Thank you for that, Alan.
All right, Teresa Bourgeois is here, Coho City Director of Operations. What are you wearing on your hands?
I was going to mention that it's National Pollinator Week, which is, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that's a little brighter thing.
So how do we celebrate that?
You need to go out and plant some seeds, some pollinator seeds that will attract bees, and you need to, if you have extra pollinators, you need to share them with other people.
Isn't that interesting?
Pollinators are key to our ecosystem.
They're also key to getting stung.
No,
pollinator plants, flowers.
Oh,
but they attract the
yellow jackets, don't they?
Well, not the yellow,
no.
yellow jackets. Like the bumblebees.
Yeah, well, bumblebees aren't really stingers, but the yellow jackets can be quite lethal.
Yeah, but they don't go after the...
They go after us. They go in after both Roselle and I and put us both in the hospital at one point.
Well, I am oddly very in favor of bees, but deathly allergic to them, so I appreciate that. But we need more pollinating plants so that we have more pollinators so that our ecosystem works properly.
I see your point.
You know, I was we have this plant, this bush that we planted, and it's very floral. I don't know what it is.
Beauty bush.
I'm not sure.
Is it pretty?
It's very pretty.
It comes back every year.
Could be a hydrangea. I'm not exactly sure what
it is. It's something.
But the bumblebees are just all over it, and they're fascinating to watch. I could sit there. I just watch them for like 20 minutes.
Working.
It's just really, really funny.
Can they sting? No. I've never been stung by a bumblebee.
I am also allergic, and so I keep my distance from most stinging insects. But I do. You know, I respect what they do.
And with great apologies to Rosemary, when I was a kid on Fire Island.
Yeah.
You were planting pollinators all the time?
We would get bumblebees. We'd take a jar, put the holes in the top, get bumblebees, and then we'd let them out, of course.
Of course. Yeah.
As long as
you didn't kill them.
No.
We need to create homes for them by planting seeds.
So, investigative journalist Rosemary Armeo, is there any mundane activity in your life that you would like to share with us this morning?
After poop and bees, where do I go from there? I think I'm going to leave it at
tomatoes.
Well, from the bees, go to the birds.
Tomatoes are giant, but there are no flowers and fruit on them. I think I have to fertilize it or something.
Yeah.
I'll hear from the gardening
He's got
experts.
The poop bags. So
yeah.
You got the fertilizer halfway
That's
there.
That's right. And you got bees. I'm set.
Do you have deer issues? The deer came and munched on my tomato plants.
No.
Oh, yeah.
I have rabbits.
That's right.
Now,
you are so right, Teresa. My tomato plants have been attacked by critters, And I don't know, because I never thought that the deer would eat my tomato plants.
It's all about the fencing, which I didn't do.
I don't do the fencing.
All right. I just want to show you. So I went on Memorial Day, and we planted flowers at my parents' grave.
Ah.
Right.
And a big, beautiful display that we put all over the... Look at that, Rosemary.
They gorgeous. Just,
well, they ate it. They ate the entire
yes,
top of the plants.
They
ate
yeah,
the entire...
Yeah.
But
they
didn't.
But they didn't eat the plant on the next grave.
They eat the
well,
flowers.
Well, exactly. Why?
How did I know that? I heard you yesterday talking about it with Matt Tannenbaum.
Oh, that's right. Did I mention it to Matt? That could very well be. I did mention it to Matt.
Some flower and fauna expert should tell us why they'll eat some and not others.
They were so beautiful.
Yeah.
But anyway.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. I'm fine.
I want that new thing where you can be buried like with a tree. And then you fertilize, you become a tree. I'd like to do that, but in my backyard.
You become the tree?
Yeah.
How does that work?
No, they're natural burials.
Natural burials, yeah. Your body is buried with a plant or a seedling or a sapling, and it grows fertilized by you.
Oh.
Isn't that nice?
It's a beautiful thing. I like that.
I like the way that works.
I don't really like any of the options, but that's a good one.
If you have to pick an option, yeah.
All right, let's go to the
morning.
Show. I know. We have a lot to talk about.
I bet we'll get a lot of letters on all of this. Pollinators, plastic bags, burials.
So we've been talking about this for weeks, and so this isn't a big surprise, but the elections bill was blocked by Senate Republicans, dealing a blow to the Democrats' voting rights push. Now the question is, what comes next? They banded together Tuesday to block the sweeping Democratic bill that would revamp the architecture of American democracy, dealing a grave blow to efforts to federally override dozens of GOP-passed state voting laws. The test vote, which would have cleared the way to start debate on voting legislation, failed 50-50 on straight party lines, 10 votes short of the supermajority needed to advance legislation in the Senate. It came after a succession of Democrats delivered warnings about what they said was the dire state of American democracy, accusing former President Donald Trump of undermining the country's democratic system by challenging the results of the 2020 election in a campaign that prompted his supporters in numerous state legislatures to pass laws rolling back ballot access. This from the Washington Post. Chuck Schumer said on the floor, "Are we going to let reactionary state legislatures drag us back into the muck of voter suppression? Are we going to let the most dishonest president in history continue to poison our democracy from the inside? Or will we stand up to defend what generations of Americans have organized, marched, fought, and died for, the sacred right to vote?" Well, now we know the answer to those questions asked by Chuck Schumer.
Yeah.
Alan.
Nice rhetoric, of course, but not nearly vehement enough. Because this could represent the end of democracy as we know it. And this is a terrible thing that when we are taking away people's voting rights, and that, make no mistake about it, the Republicans know that the more people who register and vote, the more likely they are to lose. And so they're doing everything in their power to make sure that that doesn't happen. Now, sometimes they come up with things that seem reasonable. One reasonable thing, we've talked about this before, is the idea that you should be who you say you are when you vote, and that you ought to present something. Okay, we know why they're doing it, but it sounds reasonable. To me, I have always had real caution about making a change and doing away with the filibuster, because it could well be that the Democrats lose in the by-elections, and then that's the end. On the other hand, I think that the Republicans have basically tied the hands of the Democrats. And I think if anything is to get done in the Biden administration, now may be the time to say, okay, we're going to go for it, we'll go big, and we'll see what happens.
Teresa?
I think it's important to be clear about what yesterday's vote was, which I'm sure you all are, which it wasn't a vote up or down on the bill. No. That the Republicans voted to not allow a discussion of the bill.
Mm-hmm.
They refused to, they said that it wasn't the right content. You know, McConnell, I listened to him, you know, it doesn't do the right things that they want. Well, if they were so concerned that the bill didn't do the right things that they wanted, then they should have allowed the bill to come to the floor.
Should have.
I know, but let's be clear. I mean, I think it's important for the public to understand what the vote was about.
Yeah.
But I also thought that there was, this is, not the end. This is the beginning of the next phase. This was an important step to basically show where everybody was. And where what we showed was that Manchin sided with the Democrats. So I think that that was a very good sign, and that the Democrats held their majority. And I think that the conversation will continue. And as Senator Klobuchar and others said last night, the conversation will now go out around the country.
Yeah.
The Rules Committee, for the first time in many, many, many years, is going to hold hearings around the country on this. I think that you will see Stacey Abrams and others take this discussion to the states. And as former Congressman John Lewis, my hero, used to always say, you know, these things, it takes, this is a decades-long discussion, and the discussion continues. But I think that the Democratic Party has been a party of addition, and the Republican Party is a party of subtraction in terms of getting elected. And so the Republicans, you know, what does it say about a party that you win if you prevent people from voting? I think it's a problem.
Okay, so I have to be a little bit. First, I want to stand up for Joe Manchin, who's taken a lot of abuse from the Democrats. As the Washington Post pointed out, he performed a great service. He proved the lie to the Republicans. He goes,
absolutely.
Yeah, you know, you have some good points. Here's my compromise bill, and we're going to accept some of your points, including the big step of Democrats saying, okay, voter ID, we got some problems with, but we'll do it. You have to accept all kinds of voter ID,
right,
which the Republicans never would do. In fact, some of their bills would allow you to take a gun permit as proof of identity, but not a college admission form, a college, you know, ID.
Right.
Ridiculous. So he did that. It was a true, meaningful, deep compromise, and the Republicans still held together. So kudos to Manchin, who then, as you said, switched over and did vote for
voters. Has a very viable, important
exactly
changes that probably
exactly
need to be made.
So
in the
he
bill
is exactly, and he has moved, and he did not say he would vote until he had assurances from the Democrat that those meaningful changes, big movement in this whole debate, would be accepted. So number one, that's good. We have seen progress. Number two is that you have to look at why all of the Republicans held on this one. It wasn't just the crazies. It wasn't just the McConnells. It was, you know, Susan Collins and Murkowski and Mitt Romney, who have been more than amenable to reason in the past. They all voted for this. And it gets back to an issue that has been with this country since its formation, and that is states' right. Who controls elections? And they solidly believe, and McConnell has actually argued for this in his annoying, obnoxious way, that it is not up to the federal government to decide how best to hold elections. It's up to the state. That has always been the rule in the Constitution. Oddly, it was used to defend slavery. The Lincoln-Douglas debates were about this very issue. The issue then wasn't voting rights, but it was the constitutional right of freedom.
But that doesn't
freedom. Wait, yes, it was. It's the same thing.
No.
Cox Richardson
hold on
is writing
sorry
about
we'll
this.
We'll finish up and then we'll go.
Okay. Heather Cox Richardson, the wonderful historian who does a newsletter that's very popular, writes about this today, that Douglas, what he really wanted was the railroad to go through west from Chicago. But he knew that would not happen if you were creating new territories that would be slave-free. That's the Missouri Compromise. It was the law. And so he argued for it was up to the states to decide whether or not you could have freedom. That's a basic right, even more basic than voting, whether to be free or not. And Lincoln, a Republican, argued at the time, different kind of Republican, of course, but argued then that, no, this is a federal issue, that we must take it over. And that's where the Democrats are now. So the whole debate has really been reframed, I think, by what's been happening in the past week. We'll see where it goes from here. I think you're going to see more progress. I think Biden is going to make it a priority. And number two is that he's put the Justice Department on it. You're going to see the Attorney General now looking into elections and the conduct of elections and the exclusion of voters and states that are passing, the 18 states that have passed these ridiculous restrictive suppressing laws are going to find themselves under scrutiny. And that's a good thing, too.
Okay. Teresa, you were going to break a mid-rant. Go ahead.
Yeah, sorry.
Don't be sorry.
Senator McConnell previously voted for the Voting Rights Act, a version of the Voting Rights Act.
Right.
Right. So how is that consistent with him now saying that, oh, we can't have any of this because...
Well, there is no consistency.
Consistency,
there, right?
No, McConnell?
So it's not consistent. So that's the line today, but that's not historically where the line has been drawn, not even close. And again...
Do we have to remind you that they're hypocrites?
No, I'm just reminding the listeners.
Do we have to remind you that they are going, that they feel that if the Democrats get everybody to vote, or if more people vote, that they will lose and they will lose control, and that that's what this is all about.
Oh yeah. I also wonder if McConnell is trying.
Is
McConnell trying to bait the Democrats into weakening the filibuster rules because he anticipates being in control,
that's what I think. He
wants a weakened filibuster?
I think he's trying to bait the
Democrats into changing the filibuster.
We touched on this yesterday of that being exactly what seems to be at were you a part of it?
Yeah, I was part of
it.
I was at home and I kept getting cut off, but I was listening.
I think I heard it. It was brilliant. Oh, right. It was me.
I said
that's
it.
Right.
I'm sorry. I didn't listen yesterday.
I did not say it. It was not I.
We'll take a break. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Teresa Bourgeois, and we welcome you, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We got letters on this. Let's go to them and continue our conversation. Then we'll move on to other topics. Michael says states' rights is fine with the Republicans as long as it serves their needs. But if it doesn't, they sing a different tune. Take Bush versus Gore. Wasn't it Florida's right to determine the election results without a Supreme Court intervention?
Thank you.
Okay. Anthony said yesterday Eduardo Rafael Cruz was using the hashtag Political Corruption Act. Republicans lie. It's what they do. A few years ago, the GOP had a choice, representational democracy or becoming the American equivalent of the Baath Party. They picked the latter. Anyone on that? Hearing nothing, we go to Mike's letter. While the voting rights debate seems to center on moves to restrict voter participation, the more insidious part of these restrictions is on the counting of these votes. We keep hearing this, and it's so true.
Absolutely. Awful. It's a lot more complicated, but crucial.
And if we don't like the Secretary of State, we throw him out.
Well, right. And then you get in who you want, right? They choose who they want, and then the vote is
corrupted.
Right. Mike goes on. Legislatures in Georgia and Arizona are passing where the legislative body could overrule state and local election officials and invalidate the known results. That's exactly what Donald Trump wanted them to do.
Yeah, there seems to be a campaign. I think it's now, in 10, 12 states to try to make these changes. And these really are deeply, deeply troubling because they're much harder. Sure. It's easier to understand. You know, you won't give them water on a voting line or you take away the drop boxes. It's much harder to understand and it's much more complex about the line of authority and decision making.
Sure.
But incredibly dangerous.
And just think of the states we're talking about.
Right.
Talking about Arizona, we're talking about.
Well, but we're also seeing it in states that are the toss-up states. You're seeing it in Pennsylvania. You're seeing it in Ohio.
Yeah, I was just about
to
mention Pennsylvania.
I mean, Arizona has two Democratic senators, kind of.
Right.
So.
Well, I wouldn't go that far.
But it's clearly a political strategy.
Right.
There's no question that they are targeting particular places.
Right.
And you saw how democracy held in Georgia, even though there were Republicans, but the Republicans who were in the lines of authority and decision making, even though it went against their party, they did their job.
They did the right thing.
And so these changes would say if you have a person in that position who does the right thing, then in some cases the state legislature or other could overrule them doing the right thing. And that is a problem.
And the American people will never get up and say, you know, especially those who side with these Republicans, they'll never say this is wrong, which is what the single thing that's got me the most upset about all of this. We teach citizenship, we teach democracy, we teach the Constitution, and yet when it comes down to it, people weren't listening.
Mm.
But it also it will make it so much more confusing about the problems that they're creating, right? Because who knows who's in charge? And you know,
more
I mean,
than
just,
confusing, dangerous.
Right. It's dangerous to our democracy, but for the average person, it will be very confusing for them to understand what's gone wrong.
Let me go to this letter. I think this letter has a tone to it. But it's my implied tone. So do you wish me to read it as I see it, or do you wish me to just read it straight?
Well,
why don't you read it both ways?
Okay.
an interpretive reading.
All of you might be well served to look into the agenda of the Lincoln Project, a confederation of former Republican insiders, and I do mean insiders. While you talk, they are acting to preserve American democracy. Watch out, Elise Stefanik. To paraphrase, hell hath no fury like a former Republican whose party has been co-opted by neo-fascists.
And the tone is?
Well, the tone is, all of you might be well served to look into the agenda of the Lincoln Project, a confederation of former Republican insiders, and I do mean insiders. While you talk, they are acting to preserve American democracy.
Well, you people should just stop talking.
Well, there is something. I mean, we sit here and pontificate, really. That's, you know, you have
to be
aware.
Jobs.
I know it is our jobs, but you have to be aware that it's kind of a silly job. We don't, no one's really listening to us in power to do anything that we say. So
yeah, but
there
the pay
is something
is great.
To it. But the Lincoln Project did do, I think, a remarkable job in building up. You know, a case against Trump. I wish they had worked more on some of the down ballot races as well, because Republicans did fine outside of the presidential race.
I don't mind any of that. What I mind is the implication that talking does nothing. That our discussions here, you know, we talk, somebody listens, somebody talks to somebody else. What else are you going to do? You're going to sit around this table and say, okay, since we don't have the power to subject the Republicans to what we want in this case, they, you know, too bad.
I do feel compelled of being on the show and listening to people to do more, to put, you know, put action behind your words,
so like
to
what?
Write letters, to march in protests.
Yeah.
I feel like there probably is more. I don't know what it is.
But don't you think that also, I mean, you all obviously have been on the program for so long. The number one question we get whenever we're across the street doing an event, which I guess we can do again now. That would be nice.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Over at the Linda. But even in the letters that we get, the most common thing people ask is, okay, what can I do?
Right.
What can I do?
Right.
Wait, all right, you're all sitting there talking. You've scared the zippers off of us. Now what do we do?
Yeah, and I'm afraid that the answer is nothing dramatic. We're all looking. I would love to, you know, make a stand to go out and protest and carry a sign, and everything is going to come crashing down and be reborn the way I want. That's just not the way our system works.
So, Rosemary, you think of writing letters to the newspaper, for example. I mean, every action, it seems to me, is positive.
What? Yeah, every action is positive. But it doesn't feel like enough when you see these.
It's not enough.
When you see what we're up to, 18 states, and it could be 32 states eventually passing voter suppression laws. What can one person do?
And you
they can vote. People can vote. They can help other people register.
I can't vote in the Texas legislative races.
But you're saying,
no,
what can individuals
voting
do?
Does not work.
I don't
individuals
know.
Can vote. They can encourage other people to vote. You can get involved in your local elections, either for one side or the other, or you can get involved in the process of elections, being election monitors, that kind of thing.
So listen to Teresa. These are all small little steps that really have very indirect bearing on the problems that we're talking about.
And you could absolutely.
We have no effect on Mitch McConnell. We have no effect on Joe Manchin. We have no effect really, except in our own local little way.
Well, that's what I was going to get to. And it takes years, but that's worth it, I think. Someone on this panel, and I don't remember who, I wish I could attribute it to them, and if either any of you want to take credit for it, be my guest, but was saying, look, I want to say it was Bob Griffin, but I'm not positive, is that what we have to worry about, too, is while all this is going on, we want to take action, watch out for the school board, watch out for the library board, watch out for the, and see who's coming on and take a part in those elections. I question bringing this up, but I know you, Rosemary, mentioned this on your Facebook feed, and I thought it was an interesting point because it was written about in the Washington Post, and that is my little town of Cambridge, New York, with the Indian mascot. And what we're seeing is, you know, that of how the school board was impacted. And the people who are elected, who are, I'm sure, fine people, but were elected to go on that issue. But what do they know about curriculum or school.
They know whether or not
responsibilities.
Exactly. They know about whether or not Native Americans ought to be used as mascots. And that's very well and good, way important, but way it does not begin to make you a qualified school board member.
But the point is here.
You're right.
But you can do something local. You can that's the point.
Exactly. You can get involved and be on the school board. You can show up to the school board meetings. You can have a book club discussion on these topics. There's just so many different ways, and it all starts at the grassroots.
That's
and
right.
You saw in Georgia how people responded. What did they do? They got mad and then they got busy, right? What did Stacey Abrams do? It took her 10 years, but at the but at the moment when it most mattered, they had laid the groundwork, and people came out and they voted in record numbers. They helped other people vote in record numbers because they had done the work.
You had 2 months basically after the election in Georgia to get people fired up and angry, right? I mean, it was if you didn't have that runoff, you wouldn't have had that.
Well, I think I don't disagree, of course, with any of this. I have long praised both Teresa and Libby because they have this vision of the grassroots action. But for people like me, and I think many listeners, it's so aggravating that I feel completely I vote and I do all the local stuff, blah blah blah. I feel like it has no impact. I'm sitting here every day talking about national and global issues. And how did Stacey Abrams then answer my question? How did Stacey Abrams keep the eye of all those dissatisfied people? Do this little thing and you'll be adding to a big thing. How did she do that? That's her real genius, I think.
My guess is that because they always talk about it. I haven't studied what she did, but it sounded like she did the work. She did the work of making sure that people at the grassroots level, there were organizations, that they were involved in voter registration, voter registration, voter registration. And then they had a whole Souls to the Polls movement. And then they had people involved at the polls and in tracking and such. And
also lived the story. I mean, she ran and lost, and then kept going in a questionable race against the guy who was
So it's so ironic that he's now the good guy.
Alan, go ahead.
Alan. You know, very quickly, you can do nothing,
right?
Or you can do something. Now, don't tell me that doing something isn't better than doing nothing.
Right. Well, I mean, only for your own spirit, it's better.
No,
I mean,
it's more than that. It's in terms of affecting the body politic. You will if you do something. If you move and you do something, it's all to the good. I mean, I don't think we can find ourselves arguing against that.
No. Right.
And it's all, again, I'm going to sound kind of goofy, but it goes back to Pollinator Week. It's, I know, really.
Yes, you sound goofy.
I know, I always sound goofy.
I was going to say, Teresa, you can't see anything goofy. And then she said pollinator, and I was like, all right.
So, it's all about seed planting, right? So I'm not going to plant enough seeds to solve the problem. But if everyone listening today planted 5 pollinating seeds, what a difference would that make? Just like as if everybody helped get somebody vaccinated, or if everybody helped get somebody. We talked about this over and over leading up to the election. You don't have to get everybody registered to vote, but if everybody listening here today got one person registered to vote that hadn't been registered, that could be game changing in an election.
I know a guy who sits there before the elections and he writes to other states. He writes and gets names of people in other states and he writes that
way.
If he changes a couple of those people, hey, that's all to their good.
Well, look at the census.
I got to take a break, but go ahead. Can we
what New York State 80 what was it 89 people if, you know if we had gotten 89 more
89,
people
we would have had
we
one
had
more,
more congressional districts, and if everybody had gotten one more person to respond to the census, it would have made a congressional district difference in New York State.
It's a great example. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we have many more letters. We'll talk more about this we'll talk more about this issue. We'll move on to other issues as well. Great group this morning: Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Teresa Bourgeois. We will be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We have a great group this morning: Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Teresa Bourgeois. We welcome your letters. We have many, and we'll get to those, and then we'll move on to other topics. How does that sound for
good plan?
Good plan. That's our itinerary for this morning. Mary writes, thanks for the great explanation a few minutes ago about what's going on regarding the GOP's intractability, states' rights, and slavery. Americans across the country may not be aware of the direct line we can still draw to America's Civil War and what that may mean
Absolutely.
For our future.
Absolutely.
What can we do? We can volunteer to get out the vote in places where it is being suppressed. All right, we go to this letter from Harleen, who also writes about voter suppression. If the Republicans gain the House or the Senate, it will be due to voter suppression. If democracy fails here in the United States, it will fail around the world. It will be the end of the West. It can only lead to the rise of authoritarian China and other authoritarian countries around the world. It will lead to disaster, chaos due to climate change, another dark age. You should tell Harleen about the bees again. Make her feel better.
I can't disagree with what you just said, but we all have it in our power to protect our democracy. It's each of us doing our own part to protect our democracy. We saw it work in Georgia. And I was thinking about that when Senator Warnock was speaking on the Senate floor yesterday in such an eloquent way, how he is there because people said enough is enough, and they went out in record numbers, in record heat, in record lines, and voted. That's why he's there.
I love your Pollyanne view. And
I'm glad that you
counter it. Warnock is there, as is his Democratic colleague, because Trump was such a major mess up in that state. Had that not happened, there would not be Democrats in power.
But people
responded.
They had to vote for him.
People responded. They said, no, this is not who we are. And they stood in line longer than one could ever expect somebody to stand in line to vote. And they brought out their family members. They came out in record numbers.
But wasn't that
what
they were
fighting
against, Rosemary?
This is not who we are.
Alabama went Democrat for like 2 minutes because the Republicans put up like the worst man in creation.
And the Democrats great centrist guy.
And how long did he last?
Long enough to make a difference. But Warnock
makes a difference. So do you think Warnock and Ossoff get reelected?
I think they're in big trouble, yes. I think
of course they're in trouble,
but there's a chance, and what a difference it makes right now.
And does it, as the listener just wrote, if they lose, is it because of voter suppression?
The answer is yes.
Why did they win? They won because the people in Georgia saw what was going on and said, this is not who we are as a country, and I'm going to take my 10 hours and I'm going to go stand in line in the heat and I'm going to bring some people with me.
Just for the
and
record,
we're going to vote.
Just for the record, it's more fun watching you fight with Mike than it is Rosemary.
I'm sorry.
Okay. No, that's all right.
Watching what?
Watching Teresa fight with Mike than it is with Rosemary. Yeah.
We're just having a discussion.
Linda, it is a very good discussion.
Yeah, I wish I could be more hopeful. I mean, I see all your points, Teresa, and you're right, but fighting this hard against just horrible Republican candidates, winning by a nose, and then you got to do it all over again in six
years.
That's
democracy.
No, that is not.
There was
democracy.
A chance
democracy
to say, is this who we are or not? And people said, I was so moved by it. People said, nope, this is not who we are. They came out in ways that they had, record numbers. And said, this is not
I think
who
it was
we are
an extreme circumstance. They were not making some sort of sweeping judgment of the situation. They said, yeah, Trump's going a little too far. And look at 74 million people did just still vote for him. And including in Georgia, he came close enough that he's still claiming he won there. And this was this is not who we are, they said. And then by a smidge, they picked the other guy. That does not give me hope.
But they still won the game.
They won the game, and Warnock's voice is so powerful. It's just, listen to him. Go back and listen to his speech yesterday.
I love him. I just think he doesn't have a chance for a long
time. All right, so
need him now, and he's doing what he needs to do.
Here's a letter from Linda who says, I agree with Rosemary. The Stacey Abrams situation in Georgia was easier to volunteer for even if you live here. Calls could be made, and we could help the national situation. With the manipulation of the Republicans are doing now to control and restrict voting, it's much harder to work against that. Mm-hmm. So where do you start for that? Yep. That was all on Chatty Caps.
Good point.
Shouty
caps.
Oh, shouty. I thought you said chatty caps.
No, shouty caps.
You start
capitalization
from where you are and work from there.
Ricky says voter suppression can be overcome by getting out the vote and having a strong, energized commitment to ensure the votes are counted fairly. It is not time for apathy or demoralization, but for defiance.
Ricky, there you go, Ricky. You're on my side, not Rosemary Poop.
Oh,
that's not true.
That's not true.
To be realistic and not Pollyanna is not to be defeatist.
Well, no,
no,
but,
to give
but,
up.
But it's
and
anti-
I get accused of that all the time.
Don't you need both?
But it's anti-Pollyanna.
It is anti-Pollyanna. Absolutely.
We're anti-Pollyanna.
I'm pro-Pollyanna.
What's the name of the person who's not Pollyanna? You know, Morbid not... Millie or something. I don't know.
Opposite
of Pollyanna.
Of Polly.
Grumpy.
Anna.
we were scared.
Oh, antonyms. Yeah.
Nothing,
cynical.
Nothing so cute.
Okay. Non-Pollyanna.
Yeah, I think that's. What's I think the, you're absolutely right.
What's
Alan.
A cynical
what
word
is.
For Pollyanna?
So Robert writes to us and says, we must remove the impediment to democracy, and if Democrats in charge now do not prevail, then both parties will disappear, one to fear and the other one to ineptitude. That from Bob. We got this letter, which is has the subject line. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Let me see. Larry says, the Democrats' approach to getting the voting rights bill passed was all wrong. This should not have been a fight in the Senate, but treated this an election campaign in the red state. Spend the money. Get out there. Gin up the public support to put pressure on their senators, starting in Arizona and West Virginia. Organize mass campaign rallies. Buy TV ads and political mail. Have the president out there on the campaign trail like he's running. Get on local news and make them debate. This is the path to victory.
That's good.
Well,
I like that letter.
Well, there's policy changes that are happening at the state level that have to be brought to light now before the election because people, you know, these changes are being made now in advance of the election. So I think that, yes, everybody needs to engage politically to get the right people elected, but you also, and it's happening all over the country, you need to shine a light on what's happening around different states and stop those changes.
You know, yesterday somebody said, I don't remember who it was, but that this is a continuation in so many ways of the Civil War. And I think it is. And I think if you take a look at these red states and you take a look at who these folks are, this is a commitment to being opposed to power sharing. And they want to make sure that they control the white elite and southern states continue to win in all of this. So it is not exactly an appeal to reason. These are not people who are being reasoned with, I think.
Yeah, it is. I think it's true that it's a decades-long struggle, and it takes on different shapes and forms along the way. But this is a decades-long struggle for power.
Sure, I agree with you.
Our producer, Sarah LaDuke, reminds us that the probably the opposite of Pollyanna would be Debbie Downer.
Oh, thank you. That's right. That's, just call me D.
Debbie Downer. All right.
Now, somebody called me Debbie Downer yesterday, so can I be Pollyanna
no,
and
you,
Debbie
you
Downer?
No, you definitely are not.
All right. We're going to take a break when we come back. I want to talk about, with all of you, talk about China's crackdown on Hong Kong. Huge story and implications and certainly somewhat apropos of what we've been talking about around democracy here. So we will discuss all of that when we come back. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Teresa Bourgeois. First, news with Ray Graff. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Teresa Bourgeois. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC. A little squeaky, I'm sorry. Get some WD-40 during the break. Paul writes to us and says, the Dems won in Georgia and the USA due to voter turnout, and specifically a strong black voter turnout. We need to do it again.
That's true.
Women. Black women.
We got a lot of letters about the opposite of Pollyanna, so we thank you. I'll read two of them. One is that Akasha says that Eeyore is the opposite of Pollyanna.
Yes, yeah, sad. No, he from Winnie the
Pooh. Winnie the Pooh.
He's sad and depressed. That's not what I feel. I feel angry and overwhelmed.
And then I do like this letter from Nicholas who says Cassandra is the opposite of Pollyanna. Also, by the way, Rosemary is correct.
That, Cassandra is from the myth of the fall of Troy. She always predicted truthfully the future, and no one believed her. No one listened.
All right.
Yes,
so we
I
have
like
those.
That role.
We have
but
those
you could
updates.
Shape the future. Sorry.
Yes.
Pollyanna was the last word.
In her Pollyannish way, she said, you could shape the future. I'm sorry.
This from Susan. You're discussing access to the ballot box. The real danger may be the laws that take effect after the election, such as taking away the power of the Secretary of State, removing local council members.
Yes.
Well, this is what we've been talking about. True. And giving state legislators power to overturn election results in the event of an allegation of voter fraud. What can be done about those laws? Well, and I think that's what this was supposed to address, right?
Absolutely great that she wrote in to remind people we can't be talking about that enough. Yeah.
All right, let's go to the story in what's happening in Hong Kong. In the year since China passed a sweeping national security law for Hong Kong, the mainland government has steadily tightened its grip on the city, quashing the pro-democracy movement. Officials said they would censor Hong Kong films they considered a threat to Beijing's sovereignty, a sharp slap to the city's artistic spirit. In March, pro-Beijing lawmakers called for work by the dissident artist Ai Weiwei, I believe, and to be barred from a museum. Courts have sentenced pro-democracy activists to prison, and last week the police raided Apple Daily, the biggest openly pro-democracy newspaper in the city, arrested its top editors, and froze its bank accounts. Today the newspaper said it would close this week.
Surprise!
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We knew from the minute they came marching in what was going to happen.
Absolutely. Before that, we knew from the minute that the British got out of Hong Kong
that this day was
coming.
That's right.
Absolutely.
And why now? I don't understand why now.
Well, why not? I mean, they've been cracking down.
That's the
whole world is distracted. They have a perfect answer to any Western power who might say, this is wrong, don't do this. And they're going to say, what, be like you? Who's going to defend them right now?
Sure.
The middle of a pandemic, or towards the end, I guess, I hope, of a pandemic. Everybody's distracted. They have their own problems. It's the perfect
time. It's the world's largest, basically fascist government. I mean, these people, and we're supporting it. That's the thing that gets me. You know, we're sending our stuff to be manufactured over there on the one hand, and on the other hand, we're decrying what they're doing in the South China Sea. We're decrying what they're doing with the Uyghurs. They are everything you worry about when you're talking about democracy versus non-democracy.
Correct pronunciation, just as a correction, is Ai Weiwei. Just so.
I like his
art. Hit the Ai Weiwei.
His architecture. I have to say that did we not foresee that there is no other model like this in the world? Is there any other place in the world where there's one city in a gigantic, enormous country that's carved away and you treat it differently? No, there is not. So why
would
China
put up
with this?
But they have for so long, though.
Because of the unique history of this, that was their port, more than their port, it was their portal to money, to international trade. And so they suffered it for a while, but do they have to now? Obviously no. What are we going to do? Nothing. Mm. Nothing.
Total control. That's what it's about.
So democracy in China is a long way off. It's a huge fight. Lots of Cassandras there. And it isn't something that the United States is going to make happen. Even in our most powerful united days, do I think we have the power to go in and tell China how to govern?
Well, that was my next question. And I understand that. But what should our role be? I mean, are we doing all we can at the moment?
Well, I'm telling you, the question of are we supporting their economy looms large as far as I'm concerned. We're sending them our clothing to manufacture. They're doing all of that. And that hasn't changed despite all of this.
You know, that sounded like a simple question, but it's huge, complex question. What is our relation to China now? They're not dependent on us.
But our supply chain is dependent on them, though.
Absolutely. We owe a huge debt to China.
I think that's the bigger issue.
Technologically, they are behind, but not a whole lot. We've welcomed their students into our universities where they brought tons of money over the past two decades, and now they brought back a lot of the knowledge that was here. We said, okay, that's great to that. So are they friends or enemies? what is our problem? The past 4 years when Trump decided to make America first, which meant, you know, America alone and forget about the whole rest of the world, China wasn't doing that. China didn't say China first. It marched through Latin America, South America, and through Africa, and has won new treaties and grants. Every place I go in Eastern Europe, I see signs in Chinese, not in English lately. And not lately, as if I've been traveling the past year, but you know what I mean. And so China has been on a course for a world power for, well, since I was in elementary school. And now it's coming to fruition.
And their human infrastructure around STEM, you know, science, technology, engineering, math, they have focused intently on that.
Space.
And they have space. Their physical infrastructure, they have focused intently on that in their own country and around the world. And look at, you know, we can't even reach agreement in this country on a basic infrastructure bill to move our, you know, water systems from, you know, the 1890s and early 1900s to the, you know, to the 2020s, which would give us jobs and other things. So I think that it's a, you know, it's, they are a very significant both partner and foe.
I don't think they give a hoot about human rights. So they'll go into Africa and say, okay, yeah, so you're hurting people. We don't care. Just give us whatever natural resource it is that the African country has that it wants. And they've won huge friends. And that's turned – it's weakened us because those countries now have another place to go to look for money. They're not coming to the United States. And
yet,
we've let this happen.
And yet you give a potential, you know, traveler a chance to go to the U.S. or go to China. Do you really think they're going to China, I mean, and to establish residence there first? I don't think so. I think the U.S. still offers something, some even indefinable something.
But, Alan, why the hell do the
freedom.
Chinese need new migrants from any place? They have the most huge population in the world. They don't need immigrants. They need
the smarts of other places, and that's
why they sent their children out.
Then how come they're saying, okay, you can have three children?
Because, as we discussed, there's no economy in the world that's set up for a stagnant population. You have to have growth, and they just don't have it. It's stagnant.
Yeah, and jury's still out on if that'll work.
Yeah, it really is. But the bottom line is, as far as the United States helping a democratic movement in communist China, when did we help a democracy any place? In Vietnam, did we help them? In Rwanda? Oh, yeah, we did great there, didn't we, in the genocide in the 90s? We've never offer moral support and high-sounding political rhetoric, and then you're on your own.
All right, so let us talk about what has what we know about the race in New York City. There was I don't know whether you heard, but there was a there was an election in the city of New York yesterday, and Eric Adams leads, receiving so far 31.7% of the vote. Ranked choice voting is the name of the game here. So with about 85% of the results in, Eric Adams fell well short of outright victory. Maya Wiley was in second place, with Catherine Garcia close behind. Andrew Yang was the first candidate to concede, and ranked choice voting was used for the first time, which is expected to delay the final votes. So it sort of went the way that we thought it would, right, Alan?
We did. You know, we have an African-American man from Brooklyn who happens to have been a police captain. And this is the one thing that keeps me thinking about the way this happens. One week we're discussing how to, you know, make the police force more respectful of people. And then the next week, we are having murders all over the place. And when you get those murders, people are saying safety comes first. So I'm going to vote for the former police captain. It's the external events at the moment which may determine what happens in an election. You look dubious, Teresa. You think that that's not right?
I thought it was interesting that there was a clear choice here, and the person with the police experience won. But he's also a person with a police experience who talks about the need for police reform. You get both sets of experiences. But I think, given the atmosphere of the last year and the focus on these issues, the fact that the police officer former police officer won, but I think it's possibly, I don't know, I haven't
do,
done an
do
analysis.
Do we know that he's won? Because, of course, this is the rank order.
No, we don't.
He's ahead in the...
That's a very 30, important, sorry, thank
31%.
You.
31%.
Yeah. Well, both
that
of them.
He got the most votes so far, but there is this ranked choice voting, so you're correct to say it's...
Yeah, it we is, may not know for...
It's going to be about a month, is that right?
Yes.
Now, the great de Blasio, who is a liberal, right? Isn't that correct?
Yes.
A self-announced liberal. I believe I read that he was an Adams endorser. I'm not quite sure what that was all about. Because Adams was endorsed by the New York Post vehemently.
We also have to remember that this is just the primary and there's a general election. And so while it's assumed that whoever wins, but in the interest of being clear.
Well, you can be clear, but
so
you're
it's just a delay until
Curtis
5
Lewa
months.
Was right. the Republican candidate.
And
so.
There's another one. Right, Curtis Lewa. And
well, they had the primary, but I think Curtis Lewa won the primary.
Oh yeah, he did.
I was surprised that Maya Wiley did as well as she did.
I was surprised.
And progressives did really well in the municipal elections in New York and Buffalo. There's a socialist candidate won, beat a 3-term incumbent.
Yeah,
so
what's
what's happening with this? This is really interesting. Progressives have done really well in the
do you think
local
it's
elections.
Because with Maya Wiley, is it the others split the vote? Because there were a number of progressives. I don't know. I'm not a student of what happened. There were so many different candidates.
But. I'm gonna show this to our panelists, and I realize that the audience is at a disadvantage here. But there's a map in the New York Times of who won what. And the geography of this.
Yeah.
So this is
purple?
Eric Adams.
Purple
so
is Eric.
And that's the Bronx and most of Brooklyn and the lower part of Queens. What I also find interesting is that mid to lower Manhattan was Catherine Garcia.
Mm-hmm.
Winning.
The civil servant, the longtime civil servant.
And sanitation commissioner.
Yeah.
And
picked up the garbage.
Queens came in really strong, and western Brooklyn came in very strong for Andrew Yang, who, yes, did concede, but had 11.7% of the vote. So,
it's got to be tough to be Andrew Yang these days.
Yeah, he's an attractive candidate in so many ways, and yet he just hasn't quite measured up twice now. So we'll see what happens with him.
And what's next.
Yeah, what his next move is.
But he helped shape the dialogue, so.
Yeah.
Right? He's
that
really
that
helped
helps.
Shape the dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to talk about the Buffalo mayor's race because that's interesting too. Mm. What do you think we can
take away
get out
that.
Of that? India Walton, a socialist candidate, is poised to become Buffalo their first woman mayor ever, and an apparent victory over four-term incumbent Byron Brown in a Democratic primary.
Wow.
People get tired after a while.
Yeah, you know, it's another argument for term limit. He
must
have relaxed too
limits.
Much.
Yeah.
And yeah, this
voting,
yeah, voting
term
natural
limits.
Term limit.
Yeah, that's my view of term limits.
That's the political that's the official political scientist view. It's not mine. I believe in term limits.
Yeah.
But you said people get tired of
yeah.
it.
Yeah, people
he's
get
had
tired.
A
look, Mario couldn't win a fourth term. Of course, it was a Republican year and all of that. And now Andrew's going to have his own problems. Although, I'm still thinking Andrew wins this. I can't see anybody taking him on. I don't think there's anybody with the guts.
And meanwhile, you see in the opposite side of the state, Kathy Sheehan winning by a large margin. In her, I believe, third term, correct?
That's so Albany. You know, Albany, I mean, it's so Albany.
Yeah. So Albany.
What I mean is you get somebody and you keep them. And
you hold on to them until they wither.
The Corning model will never be broken. Is that it?
That's exactly it.
That's so funny.
All right.
She was the stronger candidate.
Yeah, she was such
she was
by
far.
Oh, there was nothing. There was nothing. Nobody put themselves up. Yeah. That's exactly right.
So what do you think? So where do we go now with in Buffalo? This is really interesting. I mean, what is it? Is there any foreshadowing, foretelling here in this victory? Or is it... very Buffalo-centric.
Episodic.
Yeah, episodic. I mean, I like it, but there's now Bernie and her. So we have two socialists running in government offices, invisible government offices. We'll watch them and see if the world comes crashing down around them.
And then we'll see how they govern.
Yeah.
Right. There is.
There's that whole question of actually having yeah. to govern.
And I would just like to say, for whatever it's worth, is she's ahead, while the race hasn't officially been called, obviously, she's ahead by 7 percentage points. I mean,
yeah,
that was
it's a large victory. I don't know Buffalo enough. I don't know if it was dissatisfaction with him, a matter of just being tired of the old guy, and she ran an exciting campaign. I don't know, but I am interested enough. I'm going to go look up some articles about her.
And what was the voter turnout? That's the other thing I was wondering.
Low,
and I have not researched this. And what was the voter turnout?
I don't have it in front of me, but I know I did
probably
also read that it was
New
low.
State.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what happens. Yeah. These things happen.
Okay, so letters, and hopefully we'll get all these in before we go to our final break. Jim says, what is the other option to China manufacturing? The United States does not have the capacity to replace it.
That build the capacity. Rebuild the capacity.
Absolutely.
We go to
That's a good point.
Ed.
We have the infrastructure. We just need to revitalize it. And don't do it in exurbia. Do it in urban areas where the infrastructure is still there.
Listen to her. Listen to Pollyanna.
Me.
She's got it.
But it requires
Cahos.
Not just... Yeah, do it in Cahos. It, which is my hometown. It requires not just the physical infrastructure, but the human infrastructure. We need to have, community
have
colleges. We need to have skills. We need to have more people in the trades. We need to have more people who can do manufacturing and machinists and that kind of thing.
I was a little puzzled. I'm sorry for interjecting this, but the pronunciation of the city you work in?
Cahos.
Is it Cahos? I thought you sort of...
It's not the beginning, not Cahos. It's Cahos.
The Cahos. Yeah, well, that's what
Come
I always
Come see
thought.
The falls.
That's what I... Yeah.
The Cahos Falls.
Yeah.
The second largest falls in New York State and one of the largest falls in the eastern part of the United States of America.
Whatever.
All right, we go to...
Have you gone to see the falls?
No.
Oh, they're beautiful.
Oh, there's pollinators.
You can go see eagles soaring over the falls.
You can go see that in Poughkeepsie.
Not over the Cahos Falls. If
but
you go to Poughkeepsie, you will not.
Over the bridge.
Yeah, it is absolutely
they are
beautiful.
Spectacular.
Yeah, really, really cool.
And there's
stuff.
A whole viewing area and such.
When I was a kid, my mother was from, as you would know, your mother was from Cahos, and we would always go see the mastodon.
Yes.
But then they moved the mastodon. They moved the mastodon and then went to the
museum.
Well, went to the education department and then moved to the museum.
It's in the New York State Museum.
New York State Museum was in the education.
Yeah, that's right.
Right. Or you could go to the Cahos Library and see a
book
recreation of the
mastodon. Yeah.
You go
past
the
Cahos mastodon.
Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
And when you drive by, you can see it. It's like the Liberty Bell. You can just drive by it and see it, which is great. Although go in the library, that's okay too. Michael writes, I have listened to enough Republican discussions to remember about 6 weeks ago when Alan predicted that Andrew Yang would win the New York City primary simply because he was the front runner at the time. Take the L, Alan.
Take the L.
Loss.
Not
okay,
the
okay.
elevated.
Okay,
loss.
But I don't remember saying it. But okay, if you say I said it, I said it.
I believe you were saying that there was an understanding of why he was the front runner. But
right.
But okay, whatever. Keith writes, China is in a lot of trouble. The just-in-time global trade system has imploded because of COVID. Global companies are now looking at diversifying the production of their goods and adopting automation and robots. A nation of 1.4 billion people that are mainly low-skilled laborers will not be able to adapt to these recent trends in global supply chains. FYI, China's infrastructure is inferior and lasts about half as long as the U.S.'s infrastructure. That from Keith.
That's an interesting perspective. Thank you, Keith.
All right. John says, fear of the amount of U.S. debt China holds is overblown. China holds about 4% of U.S. debt. Japan holds more. While China divesting itself of U.S. holdings would have some impact on interest rates and the value of the dollar, I don't think it's a major consideration of how we deal with them. Then we go to this from Ed, which I don't think I've read. No. Ed says, Rosemary refers to Hong Kong as a unique situation. What about Vatican City? What about Monaco? France and Italy could claim these, but choose not to. Hong Kong is unique only if we call it so.
I choose to call it so, unique.
I'd like to give a response. Huh? I don't get that. You know, they're, those are all small places.
Those are city-states surrounded by bigger countries.
Yeah, but yeah. In one case, this is owned. And
yeah,
by,
that's a
by
deep
China.
Letter.
What did you say?
That's a deep letter. That's
how do you figure?
Well,
what's the legal...
Well, Hong
structure.
Kong was that way.
It was
colonized,
that way,
basically.
But it ain't
the
now.
British owned it and then held on to it in basically a business agreement and then gave it back. It wasn't the Vatican was Italy was very disjointed when it was set up. It was a power state along when Italy was all a bunch of power states. It is interesting.
Yeah,
Monica,
I
don't know
what
the
actual
of.
Governing infrastructure is. I'd have to go back and understand that.
Thank you for the letter. You've given us homework.
Yeah, you've given us homework. Thanks.
Although I still do think Hong Kong is different from
it is.
The Vatican.
I think it's different in its
obviously
in its
different.
Interactions, yes. In the way that interactions with...
Well, in its
with
history, its, obviously.
Right.
So this in, we'll can talk about this on the other side of the break, but the U.S. Supreme Court ruled today that, or announced the decision today, that police cannot enter a home without a warrant when pursuing someone for a minor crime. By a largely unanimous vote, the court declared that police violated the rights of a California man by pursuing him into his garage for allegedly playing loud music while driving down a deserted two-lane highway late at night. Writing for the court majority, Justice Elena Kagan said the police had no right to enter the man's home without a warrant for such a trivial offense. The court's ruling came in the case of Arthur Lang, who was playing loud music in his car late one night, at one point honking his horn several times. A California Highway Patrol officer, believing Lang was violating a noise ordinance, followed him, and when the motorist slowed to enter his driveway, the cop put on his flashing lights. Lang, who later said he didn't notice the police car at all, drove into his garage. The officer, in, quote, hot pursuit, got out of his car, put his foot under the closing garage door sensor to force the door open again. He had no warrant to enter the home, but once inside, he smelled liquor on Lang's breath and arrested him, not only for the noise violation, but for driving under the influence.
Oh, wow. Well, any case that Kagan writes for, I'm inclined to agree with her. What was the ruling? What was the number?
I will find that out.
Did she, how many people did she bring along?
I'm just
that?
Thinking about That's me driving case. Down the highway blasting Bruce Springsteen. And, oh, my goodness.
I'm thinking of that, too, but I can't think of it, oddly. Does Pollyanna have Bruce Springsteen in
blasting
her
on the highway?
I'll find out the number.
I can't believe that case got to the Supreme Court.
That's exactly. There's got to be more to it.
Okay.
I want to read that.
We have to take a break. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. So during the break, we did a little homework and found out that the breakdown in the case regarding the cop and entry and having a warrant, it was 6-3, but with two members agreeing with certain parts of the ruling.
Well, one was part of the majority. The other was Clarence, who never agrees with the liberals ever, but he concurred in part and with the judgment. So it was kind of a 6-3, 7-3 ruling. Interesting. I think Alan has a point that this is a case that John Roberts likes to see, where you have the Trump appointees voting with the most liberal judges. So see, we're not really partisan at all. And it also is a vote that restrains police, which is kind of important in these days when we're looking at police reform and power of police over citizens.
Meanwhile, also, just in 4 minutes ago, in a major student speech case, the Supreme Court has sided with students, ruling that a cheerleader's online profanity about her school is protected speech under the First Amendment. By an 8-1 vote, the court declared that school administrators do not have the power to punish student speech if it genuinely disrupts classroom study. But the justices concluded that a few swear words posted online from off campus did not rise to the definition of disruptive. While public schools may have a special interest in regulating some off-campus student speech, the special interests offered by the school are not sufficient to overcome the interest in free speech in this case. That by Justice Stephen Breyer, who wrote the majority opinion.
And who is the minority?
Who's the one dissenter, yeah.
I will find out.
That is also a really interesting case. The Supreme Court has not been supportive at all of First Amendment rights for students, for people in high school and even at some college level. So this is major. This was a cheerleader who sent a Facebook, a kind of, I think it was Instagram. So I can't remember if it was Facebook or Instagram. Social media posting, in which she let a cheer, give me an F, and you can figure out the other letters. And she sent it only to friends, and the school administrator said that violated policy. And of course, the court is saying this didn't really disrupt anything in the school, and they don't have the right to regulate it. It had nothing. She didn't post it at school or on a school computer. It was just kind of a.
So, what is the policy, by the way? Clarence Thomas was the dissenter.
Of course. Why did I not have to even have you look that up?
So what is the school's responsibility? So let's say we had a case recently in this region where a bunch of students go out. They're seniors. They go out. They are drinking. They cause a disruption. They get arrested.
Cakes and eggs?
So what is it? Well, these are high school students, in the sense of my question is, then what is the school's responsibility in that? Do we know what the school's responsibility is in that? Because the school often gets involved. And this is a case here where if you have something where at what point does that person's free speech become where they are speaking separate from being a student of that school? Or no matter what you do, are you a student of that school?
Like I'm a lawyer and can sort
we,
this
we, like,
out.
We usually have a lawyer on the show.
Yeah,
but
I know.
But I'm fascinated by that.
I should know this in this cheerleader case, but in the social media post, did she have her cheerleading uniform on?
I don't know the answer to that.
You mean when she was typing?
When she was doing the...
How did you know she was Jeffrey Toobin article?
When she was... the reason I asked about the cheerleading...
Yeah,
because,
to identify her.
Because then she's representing the school... So I'm a little confused about this case.
Same, yeah. They throw people off.
If you have your uniform, there's a difference between if you.
That's okay.
There's a difference, I believe, and I'm not a lawyer. I'd be interested in any lawyers talking. Is there a difference if you take actions when you have your uniform on versus
and
when
off.
You don't have your uniform?
By the
on?
Way, it was on Snapchat first of all.
Okay,
and,
one of those.
So that's
also interesting because Snapchat doesn't stay. It disappears after a short period.
Sorry. So take a screenshot.
She failed to make the varsity cheer team in 2017. That's what I love about the Supreme Court. So this kid's now like 20. But yeah. Anyway, she and one of her friends posted the message on Snapchat saying F the school, F softball, F cheerleading, F everything.
Oh, so she was an active cheerleader. She didn't.
No. So then the message made it back to her coaches, who cut her from the junior varsity squad after appealing to school authorities. Her parents sued the school district in federal court. So, that's interesting where the school gets involved in that.
Because even in this case, the court is saying that the school has an active interest in making sure that there's no disruption, that the student behavior doesn't interfere with learning. And in this case, they could not prove that it did.
So I've had this story on my radar for weeks, and we haven't gotten to it. And so since we're here and we have a few minutes, I would like, and we're talking about the court, I would like to ask you all what you think about this while we're talking about the Supreme Court. Justice Stephen Breyer.
Retiring.
Is getting a lot of pressure from many to retire. Many Democratic activists are loudly lobbying for the oldest justice on the Supreme Court of the United States to step down. And it has become a real discussion. Justice Stephen Breyer, who is still in apparent good health and showing passion for the job, has given no indication that he will retire this year, but he faces extraordinary outside pressure from Democratic activists to step down. Now, the idea, of course, I don't think I have to explain this, but just so you know, that you would then get a younger justice who would hopefully have similar views, and then you secure that seat on the court for a longer time. I cannot immediately find his age, but I believe he's 82. Am mm-hmm. I right on that?
That sounds right.
Okay. So, I don't know how I feel about this. Group, what do you think?
I don't know how I feel about this as an 80, a potential 80-year-old.
Not potential. You will be. You will be. Yeah.
We are all potentially 80.
Well, I'm very close.
You're closer than we are, right? Right.
It's like the Ruth Bader Ginsburg question. She gambled that she could hold on, and she almost did, but that failure by a few months has cost decades of a conservative majority.
Right. So. The issue should have President Obama. Should she have stepped down? Right. And so the issue is this is imminent now because of the fear of losing the Senate in the midterms, and so they're saying he would need to step down now so that there is time to replace him by the Democratic-controlled Senate in case the senators
although
lose
Amy
control.
Although Amy should have said you don't need a whole hell of a lot of time to get a Supreme Court justice in.
But he McConnell has been very clear already that he's going to block any effort.
Anything.
So he's so it's not a sure thing, and he's been very, very clear that he's going to block any effort to fill the Supreme Court seat. So we shall see. But it does seem a little unseemly, but I understand why the conversation's happening.
The way this usually works is that when the rest of the court, sometimes if the court is in your corner, so to speak, you are told, you are visited upon by some of your colleagues who say it's time to go.
Or and worse, if you're Anthony Kennedy, you're perhaps pressured to leave.
Right. Yes. And I think what's the difference now is that these groups are actively, I mean, I think they have, don't they have boards that go around in a truck?
They have a truck and they go around and around, yeah.
And I just don't think that's necessary. I think Justice Breyer knows that people want him to think about stepping down. I don't think it requires a billboard. I wish those people would invest their time and energy in trying to get people vote and understand the importance of the Supreme Court.
Or perhaps they should spend their time getting a change to the Constitution. A lifetime appointment is a dangerous thing. Not just to the Supreme Court either, though. I mean, we have senile senators, for example, too, who still get. I think Dianne Feinstein has had mental problems. Orrin Hatch, before he left, was showing signs of not being able to speak coherently, and yet they just stay in office. We have a system where Gabby Giffords, you remember, she was shot in the head. It was a horrible, horrible situation by a gunman, and she retired. But after about a year and a half, and in the meantime, her district was not really being representative. And if anybody had said, oh, you should retire, you're not representing your district, it's cruel and horrible, and you would be yelled out. And yet, is that really such an awful thing to be thinking about? We don't have good laws for removing incapacitated people. And we're living longer now, and the chance of mental diminishment is much higher, and we have not faced that as a society, much less in our institutions.
And, of course, things are changing because, the 80s are the old.
Right. It's different. You know. And I want to make clear, Breyer is absolutely perfect.
No, I was going to say I'm a little.
As was Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Right. I don't mean to imply that, but the issue that they represent, I think that bears some more study than we are willing to pay attention to.
But I mean,
I think it's really important to note that there's no one that I'm aware of that's suggesting that Breyer is slipping in any way, that he's a brilliant jurist.
Same with RBG. She was sharp right to the end.
Right.
Yeah,
but Gabby
physical
Giffords,
health, but not.
I also think there's a nuance issue about Gabby Giffords, though. But speaking of Gabby Giffords, I was delighted to see some news reports today that the president is going to announce some proposed changes on gun legislation today.
So that's
very, very exciting.
No, I admire her immensely.
She's amazing.
She is, and so is her husband.
Mark Kelly.
That situation, she was near death. She was certainly unable. She was unable to take care of herself, much less her district. And yet, there was no replacement. There was not even a temporary replacement.
I gotta go back, and I believe there was a process reason for that, but I got to go back and look.
Okay.
We got this letter from Pat. This is on the cheerleader case in regards to the discussion on the cheerleader and her special her social media post. I'm a retired superintendent. The general rule of thumb is if any action, in this case the social media post, caused a disruption of education in the school, then the school may give, quote, extra services, aka as discipline of the offending action. If the district could not prove that there was a measurable disruption, then it may not act. Side note, as to whether or not the person wearing the uniform would not be a sole determining factor. I hope that helps. That from Pat. And
thank
indeed
you.
It does.
Thank you.
We also go to this letter regarding China rebuild manufacturing capacity. Sounds like America first to me, something that was unthinkable to the panel a year ago. You're all hypocrites.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think it's America first.
Change the channel.
Thank you, Rosemary.
I'm sorry. I'm glad
I was
you
going
said that.
At a little more gentle approach.
Cassandra was going to say screw off, but instead she said change the channel.
Because she's softening.
Go ahead.
I do think that we have come to realize that we are vulnerable in that we don't have a robust supply chain. And we saw that in the pandemic. We saw that when there was a problem in the Suez Canal. Where the ship blocked, you know, for a week, and that disrupted our supply chain. And I think that it's important to have a robust internal manufacturing capacity, but that doesn't mean we don't trade with other nations. It just means that we have our own, at least some internal capacity, whether it's to make vaccines or machines or whatever.
We got to a lot of news today. I thank you all for being with us and stuff. So
you mean it's the end?
Thank
I
you
appreciate
for having
it.
Us.
Well, thank you.
We're so glad to be here.
Go plant seeds of hope.
Alan, thank you for... Go plant seeds of hope.
And wear gloves while you're doing it.
Plastic bags.
Yeah, plastic bags.
Plastic bags.
Poop bags.
We'll be right back after
this. Just recycle.